Welcome to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Talk radio to inspire, inform, and stimulate. Bringing you enlightened discussions with authors, creatives, innovative business and health professionals, and ordinary people living extraordinary lives. Sharing their expertise and life stories. Making a difference, one word at a time. Now here's your host, Vicki St. Clair.
Welcome, everybody. Welcome, welcome. Well, Harvard Medical School psychologist and Huffington Post blogger Dr. Craig Malkin addresses what he calls the narcissism epidemic in his new book, Rethinking Narcissism, The Bad and Surprising Good About Feeling Special. Well, I sat down with him last week, and we'll bring you some surprising insights into narcissism in just a moment. But first, you know, we just hit our eight-year anniversary here on Conversations Live. And I always try to make the most of every minute of every show, every minute of live airtime that we have, and hear as much from our guests during this hour. But today we're going to do something a little different. Every year we're trying to catch bloopers. Eric and I, certainly between us, I guess we've had quite a few bloopers.
Right? We make plenty of bloopers.
Sometimes I can't speak right. As my grandmother would say, I have the wrong teeth in. That's what she always used to say. But this year we did have some really funny situations when we were live on air with various guests. And I'm going to play one of those segments, but not just because we had a couple of snafus during that interview, also because my guest had a great story to tell, and yeah. She's quite an icon. She wrote the book Passages many, many years ago. We'll talk more about that later. We'll also hear from one of my favorite authors and guests. I just loved his enthusiasm about the work he does. But I'm going to share just a short story that he shared with us during that interview, because I, when I was reading the book, felt certain that story was from a futuristic movie. Turns out it wasn't. It's happening now. So let's get started. First of all, I'm going to bring you an interview I did with Dr. Craig Malkin just last week, and this is the first time we're airing this on Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Let me tell you a little bit about Dr. Malkin. He is an author, clinical psychologist, and instructor of psychology for Harvard Medical School, with two decades of experience helping individuals, couples, and families. His articles, advice, and insights on relationships have appeared in Psychology Today, Marie Claire, and Women's and Men's Health magazines, and at HuffPost. He also writes a little blurb for Match.com. Happen magazine. He's been a featured commentator on NPR and Fox News, and is the president and director of the Cambridge MA-based YM Psychotherapy and Consultation, where he provides psychotherapy and evidence-based couples workshops. So I'm going to bring you the tape that we recorded last week. We connected to take a high-level look at his book and what he actually means by rethinking narcissism, and that's the title of his book. Narcissist is a word that we bandy around left, right, and center today, especially it seems with the millennial generation, and we typically use it in the sense that we think somebody's too full of themselves, they're too vain. But tell us your definition of this for the purposes of your book, Rethinking Narcissism.
Yeah, the main reason I wanted to share this in Rethinking Narcissism, what the rethink does is it empowers us and it helps us see danger more easily. The image of the millennial, the image of the stereotypically vain, boastful reality TV type as a narcissist with a capital N, when we focus on that, we miss the subtler signs. The reality is that many narcissists can be empathic at times. They can be quiet. Narcissists are not always driven by money or fame or looks. So part of the rethink of rethinking narcissism is rethinking the bad. What does the bad look like? And so I wanted to give people very clear ways of seeing by talking about what narcissism is, in a way that encompasses all of it and what drives it. and walk people through, okay, here are tells, here are warning signs. So I define narcissism as the drive to feel special. And I define it as the drive to feel special because the vast majority of people around the world, according to research, see themselves through slightly rose-colored glasses. They feel a little special, and of those that do, they feel more resilient, they feel happier, they feel more optimistic, they're able to persist in the face of failure. It even helps them feel have longer relationships. They see their partners through rose-colored glasses. That is what I define as healthy narcissism, that ability to feel slightly special. And it's probably a pervasive human tendency if we look at the research, because this is all around the world. Narcissists are addicted to feeling special. You want to think about it a little bit like a drug like caffeine. You take some and it gives you a little boost and it keeps you going at too much and you're going to get into trouble. Narcissists are so addicted to feeling special, they set all other considerations aside. Instead of depending on people for love and caring and seeking out comfort, they soothe themselves the way an addict soothes themselves with drugs. They soothe themselves with feeling special.
So what I was surprised to see, and you just covered that, is that we all have some narcissistic tendencies there. And you talked about it as, think of it as a spectrum. So talk to us a little bit about the spectrum, if you would.
Yes, absolutely. So and if people want to, they can go to the narcissismtest.com or just my website, drcraigmalkin.com, and find the narcissism test. And you can see how high or low you are in narcissism and get research back, tips and feedback. People are loving this. They're finding it really helpful, especially the feedback. Over 33,000 people took it at last count. I don't even know where it is. So I would encourage people to do that because you get a real sense of this. But as soon as you define narcissism as a universal habit, this drive to feel special, it changes the way you think about the spectrum. So on the one end, you have extreme narcissism. These are people who are addicted to feeling special, chest-thumping braggarts, or people who jump on your every word saying that you're not understanding them at all. They want to be perfectly understood at all times. Mm-hmm. There's even narcissists who lift themselves up by feeling like they're the most giving person in the world that you've ever met. So that's the extreme. In the center, we have healthy narcissism. That's the center of the spectrum. That's, you know, people who can enjoy feeling special and especially special to people they care about. If you pay attention to your own experience, most of us want to feel more important than the other 7 billion people on the planet to at least one person, our parents, our loved ones. Like, our needs and feelings matter enough to have some focus, and that's part of it. People who never expect to feel special, who never enjoy that attention, they've often been raised by extremely narcissistic parents, and they can be very empathic, but they live their life by the rule, the less impact I have, the less room I take up, the better.
Wow.
And they're afraid of seeming narcissistic in any way. In our research, I call this echoism, drawn from the myth of Narcissus and Echo. Echo was the nymph who could only repeat back the last few words she heard someone say. So this is the surprising good. Helping people who struggle with echoism embrace enough of that feeling of feeling special to protect themselves, because people with echoism often wind up in relationships with extremely narcissistic partners, and I want to help them. And so I lay out very clear ways to do that in Rethinking Narcissism.
Right. So I took your test actually on your website, and I'm not at all special. I'm quite average according to that.
Okay. Right. You're unhealthy narcissism.
So you say that people at the extreme low end, the echoists, can be, I read that they can be, they might even be depressed because it can be a problem for them. And as you said, they often end up in relationships with narcissists. So if somebody's at that low end, is it possible for them to change? Is this a brain chemistry thing that we can't change, or can we change it through learned behavior?
We can change it through behavior. actually. I mean, part what pushes people towards echoism, I think there is, I'm a nature nurture believer. Based on most of the research, personality is pretty much 50-50. Any studies that show that a personality is more heritable than 50%, I just don't tend to buy into that, because personality is a complex thing and involves our interactions with people. So people who are pushed towards echoism, often they have extremely narcissistic parents, and what they've learned is, if I want to be loved at all, I have to dial down my needs. Mm. I have to have as little impact as possible, and that is a form of what in the research we call insecure attachment. We can change our attachment style. So echoists can not only embrace that healthy aspect, that healthy narcissism, the rose-colored glasses, by learning to be clearer, more open about when they need more, and when they need comfort, when something doesn't feel right. People who struggle with echoism tend to bury their disappointment under self-blame. They blame themselves for everything. Oh, I'm being too needy. Oh, I went about that wrong. That's why it happened this way. And so part of what happens when you start to instead express your disappointment in healthy ways, like, you know, when I heard, you know, what, you're one of the most important people in my life, mom, dad, whoever, and when you question my every feeling, I feel like I'm nothing in your eyes. That's the kind of communication that tests out whether or not that person can actually care about you and be there for you. When you learn to do that, then you start to shift.
Okay. I mean,
that's what secure attachment is about.
Okay.
And securely attached people see themselves through rose-colored glasses.
And then what about the other end of the spectrum? Because, of course, at the other end of the narcissism spectrum, you might even have psychopaths. I actually read, a long time ago, I read that not all cult leaders are psychopaths, but every single one that was researched is a full-blown narcissist.
Yeah, not surprising. So when you get into the extreme end, where these are people who are addicted to feeling special, often you will find people I would call psychopaths by training, because many criminal psychopaths have been abused. They've been mistreated as kids. If you look at the research, the most violent offenders, they've had violence done to them, and so they learn this. But psychopathy is one of those personality tendencies that's been so well researched, and there does seem to be a strong genetic component there. But again, I think what brings it out is if you teach a child, and I have a chapter called In Rethinking Narcissism, where I lay out basically 8 keys for raising a caring, self-confident child. If you teach a child how to be open about their problems, how to turn to others when they need comfort or caring and be clear about it and understand what other people are feeling, if you teach them, if you model how to talk about feelings, they can't become a narcissist. Narcissists devalue, in the research, they devalue caring and connection. You ask them if they feel committed, and they're like, nah, not really.
Interesting.
Your partner. They pick trophy wives and trophy husbands.
So what if we do end up, we find ourselves in a relationship with a narcissist? I know we only have a couple of minutes here, but I do want to get this in. What are some of the things we should be aware of being in that relationship?
Well, the first thing are the stop signs, I call it. Really, people worry, often write into me and say, I'm worried I'm with a narcissistic girlfriend or boyfriend, and then they describe abusive behavior. The person is calling them names and putting them down and unleashing rage and just mistreating them, or you know, worse, they're actually physically abusive. And my answer is always the same. It doesn't matter that it's narcissism that drives this. If you see abuse, you need to find help ending a relationship. It's not always easy, but I spell that out very clearly in the book. Not all people who are narcissistic are abusive, but if you see abuse, that's a stop sign. And psychopathy is a stop sign. Cold, remorseless, manipulative behavior where the person, you catch them in a line, and you know they're not, they won't admit to it, and this is repeated, then you might be dealing with psychopathy, and that has a very poor prognosis.
Mm. And a final quick thought you'd like to leave our listeners with. The book is called Rethinking Narcissism, and I think it's really going to help a lot of people.
Final thought, I want people to understand that if they struggle either with not feeling special enough, or even if they feel too special, that and they're narcissists, or they worry they are, there are very clear steps that you can take once you know what drives it. And I lay that all for you in the book very concretely, so that you don't have to struggle so much. And you certainly don't have to struggle, should I stay in this relationship or not? I give you very clear answers to that, too, whether, you know, when you should go.
Dr. Craig Malkin, thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me.
And again, that was Dr. Craig Malkin. You can find out more about him and the amazing work he's doing at drcraigmalkin.com. And his book is called Rethinking Narcissism, The Bad and Surprising Good About Feeling Special. And you can go up there and take the narcissist test yourself and see how special you are. And the book is really a great read. He writes just like he talks, so it's very accessible information. And I really, myself, enjoyed it very, very much. I want to just end this segment with a short passage from the end of the book, just to remind us that he says, "It turns out that even Echo and Narcissus make a pretty good pair once they meet in the middle of that spectrum that he was talking about. A good life balances our own self-interests with other people's needs. That's healthy narcissism. It's what gives us the energy to build a life full of adventure and self-discovery." He says healthy narcissism is where passion and compassion merge, offering a truly exhilarating life, and that's a pretty great place to be. And that's how he ends the book, and I would agree with him. All right, we're going to take a very quick break. When we come back, we're going to continue or start celebrating 8 years live on air with Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair.
Parkinson's disease affects as many as 1 million people in the United States. At the Parkinson's Disease Foundation, it's our mission to beat this disease. To learn about the Parkinson's Disease Foundation, or if you want to help support our work, visit our website, pdf.org, or call us at 800-457-6676. In the Northwest, contact the Northwest Parkinson's Foundation at nwpf.org.
Did you know that capsizing boats and people falling overboard account for over 70% of boating fatalities? 80% of those fatalities occur on boats under 26 feet and on boats with operators who've had no formal boating instruction. 50% of all boating accidents involve alcohol. Be smart this summer. Know who you're boating with. Wear a Coast Guard approved life jacket and don't drink and boat. This message is brought to you by supporters of Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair and the JMB Group, who wish you safe boating fun.
Do you love wildlife? Then make a real difference by helping PAWS care for sick and injured wild animals. Volunteers help feed and clean the animals until they are well enough to return to the wild. Sign up today and help save a wild life. No experience necessary. All training is provided. Visit PAWS.org or call 425-787-2500.
Coming August 10th on Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Does depression make you more susceptible to Parkinson's disease? A new study published in the journal Neurology says it does. So what's the link between depression and Parkinson's? And can you take steps to prevent or delay Parkinson's disease? Dr. Fiona Gupta, Medical Director of the Deep Brain Stimulation Program at Hackensack University Medical Center, joins Vicki to answer those questions and more. Join us every Monday at noon Pacific time and find podcasts of shows at Conversations. Conversationslive.net.
Thanks for listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Follow me on Twitter at Vicki St. Clair.
1150kknw.com. It's why they invented the internet. We think. Alternative Talk, 1150 AM.
Come on, let's celebrate. There's a party
going on. I was going to do a woohoo then. But I decided to laugh. I just started laughing instead. I couldn't get it out. Well, we are celebrating 8 years live on air with Conversations Live today. I want to take a very quick minute here to give huge kudos to Eric Ryder. I could not do this without him. This man is awesome. We have actually been working together for 11 years.
Wow.
3 years.
I can't believe it's been 11 years already.
That's a prison sentence.
No. It's gone by so quickly that it doesn't seem like it could possibly have been 11 years.
It is, my friend.
Wow.
Yep. So, 3 years with Positive Choice Talk Radio and the Vicki St. Clair interviews.
Right.
8 years with Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair.
Mm-hmm.
And he's the guy who keeps us all running and keeps us live and is running around like a chicken with his head cut off. When those technical snafus happen, you don't get to see all of this. Next time,
you don't get to see all of it.
I was actually thinking next time we have a technical snafu, like, you know, when you're running around trying to chase a guest or something and we've got technical issues, I should turn the camera on you. I think that would be more fun than just having it staring at me when I'm sitting here waiting.
You want to see me sweat more than I already do?
But I keep you calm, don't I?
You do. You're such a consummate professional that, honestly, it makes my job so much easier. And so I really appreciate what you do. And it's an honor, really, to be associated with this program. So thank you very much for continuing this long.
Well, likewise, I wonder if things would have been different if we hadn't, been on this journey together, really, because we do have some, it's challenging keeping it going, putting it on every mm-hmm. week after week. And, we have some fantastic listeners out there. And that's why we do this, of course. And also we have some wonderful sponsors and supporters around and about. It just all comes together and it makes it all worthwhile.
Well said.
We also have, I have David Vanver, who's worked with me for 5 years. He's not in the studio with us. He lives down south. But we have worked remotely together for 5 years. I've only ever met him once. And I think we talked twice on the telephone. Everything else is done by email. But he also is a consummate professional and just very proud to have these two guys associated with the show. And it's great to come in and see Eric's smiling face every Monday. That's all I can say. So I thought today what we'd do was just play a couple of clips that maybe surprised me. Well, the first one surprised me, okay? The second one is one of those snafu kind of stories we're talking about. But the first one is Dr. David Lewis. And he was a guest on the show last year. I just love this guy. He's so enthusiastic about his work. His passion is contagious. But what I wanted to play was a story that just highlights how far technology has come. And so we're going to play that in just a moment. Before we do, I want to say a quick hi to Bunny, who's come down from Vancouver, Canada. She's staying with me for the week. And she's my aunt she's coming to the studio with me. So, Bunny, do you want to say hi to our listeners here?
Well, yeah. Hi, Michelle. I feel very fortunate and lucky to have this opportunity to come to the studio. And I'm a great fan of Seattle. And if the traffic wasn't so busy on I-5, I would come down more frequently and see everyone. It's a great place to be. And thank you very much.
Well, that little twang there she's from London, but she spent a lot of time in Australia, in case anybody was wondering. Where does that twang come from?
It's definitely a transatlantic accent.
That's so, right. She has traveled the globe. In fact, I think I mentioned you, Bernie, once on a travel show with Willie Weir when he was cycling, and I said, oh yeah, my aunt does that. She goes on the freighters and she travels all over. It's like, so anyway, all right, so we're going to bring you Dr. David Lewis, the clip from Dr. David Lewis. And as I said, he joined us from England. His book was called The Brain Cell: When Science Meets Shopping. It looks at how advertisers, marketers, retailers, political campaigners utilize this research to shape each stage of our experience. And in this particular conversation, it was especially focused on how the latest research in neuroscience reveals the hidden influence that shape the way we shop. But so we're going to share this very quick story that, as I said, I thought was from a movie. And this book is about how the new mind sciences and the persuasion industry are coming together to sell us, even when we don't think we're being sold. And I want to begin with a story that, honestly, I had to read twice because I felt sure I'd misread something, and that you were citing a tale from a science fiction movie in your book. And you probably know what that is. It's right in the introduction of the book, and it begins with this. Imagine taking a journey by train or coach and resting your head wearily against the window, which we do when we travel. Immediately, you hear an advertisement that seems to come from inside your head, a voice which appears to be located behind your eyes and between your ears. Would you continue that story for us?
Well, this is a new technology. It's been experimented with. I don't think it's ever been rolled out as a commercial technique, and I think it would meet a lot of consumer resistance if it was. But nonetheless, it does work. Essentially, what they do, they are able to transmit sound through the glass of the window. And so they can send either a broadcast message like you might get when you watch your TV. Or what I think is kind of even spookier for me is that there are now billboards. Again, this is experimental work, but I think it's going to hit a main street near you before too long, which will actually recognize you. Well, it won't recognize you as an individual. It'll know whether you're a man or a woman, and it will know what age you are. Because it will do this by essentially capturing a photograph of you, let's say while you're standing waiting for a bus, and then it will use facial recognition software to know what sex you are, as I say, what approximate age, and then it will put up an advertisement which is designed for that particular demographic. So, you know, if you're a young guy, you probably are not very interested in an advertisement intended for a young woman, or the other way around. So that's where we are at the moment. That's being done. There are some sites in Japan where this is being done. But I think what is going to come within the next 5 years or so is the computer will then go to your social media. So it won't just recognize you, Vicky, as a woman.
Right.
It will recognize you, Vicky, as Vicky.
Right.
And it will know if you have a Facebook page, for example, your likes and dislikes. And it will then pitch an advertisement to you which is designed specifically for you rather than for any kind of any woman in your age range, or any guy.
I'm wondering if anybody really likes this. I'm so against it that I can't wrap my head around anybody liking it, but I'm sure that some people do.
Well, I think the reason I wrote the book, the book is kind of in a follow-up from a book which was published in America in the 50s, I think, by an American journalist, you've probably heard of him, called Vance Packard.
Right.
And he wrote a book called The Hidden Persuaders. And this was really talking about how, in those days, techniques taken from Freudian theory and Freudian analysis were being used to pitch advertisements and make them very influential, very persuasive. Now, I think Vance Packard would turn in his grave if he could see what the hidden persuaders are in our society, because they're everywhere. And one of the reasons I wrote the book was to kind of inform consumers about what is being done in their name. Now, I'm not saying anything sinister or wicked about it, and certainly retailers and advertisers and marketing people say, look, if you're going to send an advertisement to somebody, it makes sense to send them an advertisement for something which they actually want, you know, rather than something right. they haven't any interest in at all. So they could say, by doing this, you're actually saving them time. They're not being bombarded with a thousand commercials of products and services they have no interest in.
Well, yes, the truth, they say, is stranger than fiction. And I had it on good authority a few weeks after we did that interview that somewhere in, either it was either Japan, it was one of the Asian countries, that they are actually using that. I wouldn't be at all surprised. So anyway, we are celebrating today 8 years live on air, and that was Dr. David Lewis. His book was called The Brain Cell, When Science Meets Shopping. You can find out more about him and the amazing work he's doing. For more than 30 years, he's been studying the unconscious mental processes that underpin every aspect of our lives. It's really quite fascinating. If you have a business, you definitely need to check him out, because it's really going to help you understand your customers and your target audiences, etc. All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to play you another clip that has a couple of little snafus in it, like we were talking about earlier. But, you know, we can laugh at ourselves, so all is good. Please stay with us. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. We will be right back.
Kissed a bear, I've never kissed a goon, but I can shake a chicken in the middle of the room. Let's have a party.
Did you know that capsizing boats and people falling overboard account for over 70% of boating fatalities? 80% of those fatalities occur on boats under 26 feet and on boats with operators who've had no formal boating instruction. 50% of all boating accidents involve alcohol. Be smart this summer. Know who you're boating with. Wear a Coast Guard approved life jacket and don't drink and boat. This message is brought to you by supporters of Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair and the JMB Group, who wish you safe boating fun.
Let's see if I guess that this just isn't working.
Knowing you have a great idea for a book is one thing, writing it another. So what's stopping you? Maybe you can't find time. Maybe you don't know where to begin. Maybe you wrote a couple of chapters, then disappeared down a rabbit hole. Or maybe you'd rather someone else write it for you. Partnering with the right coach or ghostwriter can make all the difference between talking about your book and finishing your book. As an award-winning writer and strategic consultant, Vicky St. Clair's storytelling credits span from business, health, self-help, and memoir to New York Times and USA Today best-selling anthologies. Vicky partners with people just like you at the exact level you need. Whether you need a little encouragement, editorial guidance, or full-blown ghostwriting and consulting services, if you're serious about telling the story you know is inside you, stop procrastinating. Let's get your story down on paper. Contact Vicky today. Email Vicky at VickySt.Clair.com. or call 1-800-495-7617. See more about Vicky and her work at VickySt.Clair.com.
Oh, yeah, that could work.
This is Martha Norwalk. Every Sunday morning, beginning at 9 a.m., thanks in part to Anti-Icky Poo, the product that gets the stink out, we cover the world of animals. This week, it's a harmonic and energy-shifting Sunday with Jude and Paul Ponton from Whispering Dragon in Seattle. They'll be in the studio with their acutonic forks, Tibetan bowls and bells, pooas and rattles, ready to do remote sessions for you, your animal friends, your home or business. Open phone lines throughout the show, so call in early. Martha Norwalk's Animal World, Sunday morning, 9 a.m. to noon, right here on Alternative Talk, AM 1150.
Coming August 10th on Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. Does depression make you more susceptible to Parkinson's disease? A new study published in the journal Neurology says it does. So what's the link between depression and Parkinson's? And can you take steps to prevent or delay Parkinson's disease? Dr. Fiona Gupta, Medical Director of the Deep Brain Stimulation Program at Hackensack University Medical Center, joins Vicky to answer those questions and more. Join us every Monday at noon Pacific Time and find podcasts of shows at Conversations. ConversationsLive.net.
Thanks for listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. Listen to podcasts of past shows at ConversationsLive.net.
Tell your friends. The place to be is Alternative Talk, 1150 AM.
I hope you're celebrating with us today, because without you, we would not be here. Without our fabulous listeners, without our incredible sponsors and supporters of Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair, and of course without Eric Ryder and David Banfer, who helped me out so much I can't even tell you, we just would not be here. So we're celebrating that today, and we talk a lot about gratitude on the show and being spiritually appreciative of people and things, and today that's what we're doing. We're being appreciative. And so we thought it would be kind of fun. You know, we have a lot of snafus, especially me talking. We have a lot of snafus. And so we thought it would be fun to collect bloopers. And I always forget to note which shows I made major bloopers in. But we're going to start doing it now, Eric, for next year.
Okay. up to now, we've been like, let's just put that out of our mind. Try to forget that happened. Move on, upwards and onwards, right?
We're just a live radio.
That's
live
right.
Radio. Doesn't matter how well prepared we are or how excellent our equipment is. It's live radio, right?
Things happen.
Yeah, you have to learn to twist and turn as needed and go with the flow, as some people would say.
Yep.
So this was one of those snafus. We had an award-winning literary journalist with us. Her book actually is she's been given Lifetime Achievement Awards by Books for Better Life. I mean, she is extremely well-known. She was very, very successful with her first book. Or not her first book, but Passages, which came out many years ago.
Lots of experience with media. This is... to use the expression that CNN seems to like to use a lot, lady, this wasn't her first rodeo, so to speak.
No. And the first time we had her booked, and let me tell you, this had been booked months in advance, and I'm not picking on her, okay? These things happen.
They happen.
Yes. But we had booked her many months in advance at the request of her publicist, and we're live on air, and nobody can find her. You know, I'm assuming nobody told her, hey, this is on your calendar. And so we had to kind of fudge things that first time. So then we rearranged the time for a whole different, I think it was the following month. The same thing happened. We couldn't find her. We're live on air and she's not to be seen. Her assistant said, we'll call you back. I'm like, you do know we're live on air, right? And so very luckily, Nicolette Hahn-Niemann, who's also an amazing guest, she was Bobby Kennedy's attorney on the environmental issues. She's really fought hard for environmental issues and et cetera, et cetera. And she was a returning guest. And so we called her or Eric called her and she was able to jump. Do you remember that? She
yes.
jumped on as our first guest while they were frantically looking for Ms. Sheehy. So I'm just going to play this segment to you from the beginning and you'll find out where Ms. Sheehy was. We did cut some of it out because there was so much honking and screaming from fire engines and
a lot of street noise.
And I do believe there was a little in the middle. She goes, oh, wait a minute, Vicky. Yoo-hoo, are you my driver?
Right.
We did cut some of that out, but here's most of the interview. And we're bringing it to you today, not just because of the snafus, but she had a fantastic story to tell. Here we go. And my next guest was known in the 60s as the girl journalist. She broke through cultural taboos of her time to build a daring life and career, and that's what we're discussing today. Her newly released memoir, Daring, My Passages, which is really a testament to guts, resilience, and smarts. So let me tell you who my guest is. Gail Sheehy, the author of 16 books, including the classic New York Times bestseller Passages, which was named one of the 10 most influential books of our time by the Library of Congress. She's a multiple award-winning literary journalist and one of the original contributors to New York Magazine and has been a contributing editor to Vanity Fair since 1984. Gail Sheehy, welcome to the show today.
Hello. You won't believe this, but I'm running up the street trying to catch my car service in front of Bloomingdale's. It's a mad Christmas rush in New York.
So I'm just curious, after you had such a great hit with Passages and you've spent this terrific career, you spent the next four decades of your life, you say, interviewing thousands of women and men, from high schoolers in Harlem to Benazir Bhutto just days before her assassination. And suddenly you say you found yourself thrust into the passage of your 70s. Your husband was slowly dying. And you questioned, what did my life add up to? So you decided to turn the lens on your own passages. What made you want to put it down on paper and share it?
Well, I'm a writer, first of all, and anything important that happens in my life, but many of the important events in our social history, I write about them. That's how I sort of figure it out. And I thought, examining my own passages with the lens that I've developed and honed over so many years could be illuminating and inspiring, because after all, I still made it to my 70s with a having had it all by my 40s, having had to postpone some things and sacrifice some things, as everybody does, even though I thought I would have it all in my 20s, but the marriage blew up, as it often does. And so I thought it could be inspiring to other people, particularly people who are interested in the arts or a career for themselves, or who want to combine career with a loving family life.
Right.
That's the hardest that's the hardest job that women have, and they still do have a hard time.
They do, having to balance everything. So you were very persistent in your early days. There was this new kind of journalism coming about, and we've been experiencing a whole other new kind of journalism over the last few years with technology. But you really wanted to work with somebody called Eugenia Shepherd, and you just couldn't get in with her. And I was just, I just noticed how persistent you were, and eventually you get a call from her, and she wants you to go work with her. What kept you going towards working with her?
Well, first of all, I've been campaigning to get an interview with her for about 9 months. I think that's how it all starts. I wanted to be a writer since I was in my, seven, when I got my first typewriter, and I loved hearing the clack of the keys making words, and I thought I was really making a little book.
Right.
And
right.
When I was in married and putting my husband through medical school and stuck out in upstate New York, I kept reading the Herald Tribune, the great paper of its day, and reading the Women's Page, and that's the only place where girl journalists were able to get a job. So I kept writing to her. And then there was an awful long newspaper strike, and I didn't hear. Finally, I got a response. So I went in and had my, my little pitch all prepared, and she hired me to be a feature writer. But I soon tired of, I didn't want to write about, the latest fashions for young matrons giving tea parties. I really wanted to write about the things that Tom Wolfe was writing about, the radical chic, and
right.
The things that Jimmy Breslin was writing about, kind of the theater life and low life of New York. So I had to sneak out of her office and down the back stairs to the city room, the testosterone zone, where only men worked, and pitched my best story to Clay Felker, who later became the man who shaped my career, and much, much later became my husband.
Right. I mean, I know he had a lot of influence on your career, but tell me specifically how he helped you shape your career and become a literary journalist, how you broke out of writing those fluff pieces, if you will, because that's really all women did write about back then, were the fluff pieces. This is too funny.
I know. We're in the middle of the Christmas shopping rush in New York, so you're hearing
beep, beep.
And noises. Well, Clay gave me the best advice that I had very early in my career. He asked me, after I'd only written a few stories for him, what I knew about politics. And I said, well, my father is a country club Republican, and my mother is a natural-born bomb-throwing Irish bomb thrower. So what I know about politics is it's about fighting at the dinner table. And he said, great, then you'll understand Bobby. said, Bobby who? Bobby Kennedy. He's running against Gene McCarthy for president, and I want you to cover his campaign. And I said, me? I've never written a political story. And he looked at me and said, Gail, the way to make your name as a journalist is not to do a lot of little stories. No matter how good they are, they're not going to change the conversation. What you have to do is tackle a big story, something everybody's talking about, but they don't know the why. And so I did. I took the dare, went on the campaign, had a fantastic time, was able to sit next to Bobby Kennedy on a yo-yo flight up and down the Cascade Mountains of Oregon, and finally got an interview. And then just as we were trying to land in Portland, we couldn't see, but the plane was heading straight towards our plane, and all of a sudden, in the mid-drop, Bobby Kennedy put, I knew Gene McCarthy was desperate. I didn't know he was that desperate. And I could see from that humorous remark that this is a man who was a total fatalist. He had seen so much death in his family, mm-hmm. he was not afraid of it. In fact, he knew he was the target. And the next night, his own life was ended at the point of a gun. So it turned out that was a great dare to take, and I had a very, very significant story. And I learned to, you know, take whatever I, just go for the stories that I could find or that I was assigned, and kind of live in the middle of them.
Right, right. You had all this fabulous success. I mean, you were one of the first women, I believe, to be embedded in Warzone. You did a lot of daring stories along the way. You say that whenever you felt fear, you know, many people become paralyzed and just go into denial and don't do anything. But when you feel fear, you dare. Tell us what pushed you through that. What do you think that's just intrinsic to who you are?
Well, I'm a normally fearful person. We all have fear. In fact, it's at the base of all of our difficulties, because we either cover it over with anger or with pulling back and feeling weak or with being alienated. And I didn't like the feeling of pulling back from my fears. I had to find a way to let fear activate me. And so it became a habit. Actually, you know, whenever you might think it was reckless to put on hooker boots and blue suede hot pants and march up and down the street pretending to be a prostitute.
Now, you're not doing that now, are you?
No, not right now. I'm fully dressed, dancing inside the door and nobody would recognize me at all because I fell on my face and then I have a big bruise on one side. So
oh dear.
I'm quite safe.
Right.
But I did a lot of things that people would think were either daring or even a little foolish. I followed Hillary Clinton into the ladies' room at a conference, and turned out she was feeling in despair because she was being blamed for the defeat of the Democrats in the by-election in 94 because of her health care policy. And she let her hair down and confessed to me she didn't know what to do anymore. And the next thing, she told me, thank you for writing The Silent Passage, because she was in menopause.
Oh, okay.
And that was one of the taboos that nobody talked about at that time.
Right, right. So, and you say it's very empowering to dare, and I do think that myself. If you're in fear, taking that action just seems to empower you and acts as a catalyst to spur you on. One of the things I was really struck by in the book, your first husband was a doctor. You put him through medical school. You worked while you were pregnant up until the very last minute while you were pregnant. And put him through medical school. And also your father, you say neither one of them acknowledged you as a writer, acknowledged the work that you did.
I'm sorry, I couldn't hear the end of your question. You were talking about me being pregnant and working until the night that I delivered.
Right, but neither your father nor your husband acknowledged you as a writer.
No, that's right. Neither of them read anything that I wrote, which was terribly disappointing. And not only that, my husband had an affair that he couldn't break. So mm-hmm. That was one of the daring things I did. I had to dare to leave a marriage that I thought was, you know, the way I would be able to be a writer and support a family at the same time.
And that was the inimitable Gail Sheehy. Amazing story. Yes, we had some snafus on that, but she has lived a life, let me tell you. She's been all over the world. She's worked with the top people, spoken to just some amazing people around the world. And it was an honor to have her on the show.
Yes, and we talked about how this wasn't her first radio interview before we aired the clip. And what really comes across is, despite the fact that she's out on the Fifth Avenue, I think it was,
yes,
in New York, doing her Christmas shopping.
And there's pandemonium around.
She is still able to carry on a very interesting conversation and talk about her book in a very cogent way. And I got to say, I'm impressed. I wish her publicist had got her scheduled at a time where she could be, you know, sitting in a room or something. But yeah, it was fun to listen back to that, for sure.
Yeah. I call these moments my Bridget Jones moments. Remember that book, Bridget Jones?
Yes.
The movie. And, you know, I think along the years, I've learned that journalists who work in live television and surgeons, we tape those because it's happened so many times that they got called in by the TV station from a breaking story and had to reschedule, and surgeons had to do some life-threatening surgery at the last minute, and they've got called into surgery and we've had to reschedule. So
that's true.
So for the most part, yeah, I do tape now journalists who work in live TV and surgeons.
Okay. Yeah, I was wondering what was the thought behind that, because it is Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. But, you know, those pre-recordings that you do with journalists and heart surgeons and stuff, we don't really edit those either. They're just a straight shot conversation. So it is a live conversation as it goes to the recording.
So. Yeah, it is. So, you know, we've done, gosh, I was looking back, Eric, at the people that we've talked with. And, you know, I mean, I guess include medical professionals who are leading the way in health and well-being, whether it's mental health, physical health, spiritual health, business thought leaders who share great tips and tools and strategies for people's careers, for people who are in business. We talk with forward-thinking conservationists who are, you know, saving endangered animals and trying to rehabilitate areas that are pretty much destroyed. We've had adventure and travel stories on. We've had a lot of National Geographic photographers, filmmakers, award-winning filmmakers, New York Times best-selling authors, Pulitzer Prize-winning authors, and award-winning writers. I mean, we've had some really great guests this year.
We have indeed. Yeah. So, I'm impressed every week when I come in and I see who's on the show. Or the week before when I do the promo talking about who's coming up on the show. It's like, wow, this sounds like a show I want to listen to. And so I'm lucky enough to do that each week.
So, again, we're celebrating 8 years live on air with KKNW. And
we're going to have some fireworks for that, right?
I thought you were machine gunning me for a minute. I thought he's like, okay, enough is enough. 8 years, your limit.
And it's okay, despite the dry weather. We're doing that in a safe place.
We're doing that in a safe
place.
Don't worry. So we're almost at the end of our show, but I want to just, again, say thank you to everybody for supporting us. And again, Eric, it's such a pleasure working with you, always.
Likewise.
And David, we were hoping was going to call in, but he has to work. So, but you know, shout out to David too, down in down south. And Bunny, thanks for joining us today. Appreciate you coming into the studio with us today. She's down from Vancouver and heading back pretty soon. And we look forward to bringing you more great programming next year. And you know, the more feedback we get from you, the more we can tailor programming that you really want. So I love hearing from you. There's a ton of different ways you can get hold of me on Facebook at Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair, on Twitter at Vicki St. Clair. Where else, Eric? Conversationslive.net. You can email me at info@conversationslive.net. And you can also reach me on our toll-free 800 number at 495-7617. 800-495-7617. Anything else you want to say right now, Eric? Before we head out today, our last celebratory statement.
I just want to say thank you one more time for continuing to do this show as the Alternative Talk 1150 representative here. I just got to say it's been a real pleasure on behalf of the station having you on. And I said before, it was an honor, and I honestly believe that. And I think that is the case. And we hope you stick around for as long as you enjoy doing the program, because it is a real pleasure.
Well, I enjoy doing it. So thank you. And as long as we continue to get good sponsorship to keep us going, that's where we're heading. We're going to keep going. So thank you so much, Eric. And thanks to all of you for joining us today. We really do appreciate it. If you have feedback or comments or questions, you know where to get me. I just gave you a whole list of places to get me, but I'll read out the 800 number again. 800-495-7617. Or just shoot me a quick email at info@conversationslive.net. We'll be back next week with a really all-new live show. And until then, live well, live strong. Hi, this is Vicky St. Clair. If you have a business, service, or event and would like to deliver your message to a large audience, call me at 425-269-4772. Let Conversations Live shine the spotlight on you. Call 425-269-4772.